It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. The God Journey.
Hey, I'm back.
You're back.
I'm here.
Welcome.
I'm here. Thank you.
Thus the other music that introduces you. And Brad's joined us for maybe one, maybe two. I don't know how much time
you've
got today.
We'll get docking. We'll see.
How was your summer?
Was busy and a bunch of little travel here and there, but we had a nice little jaunt up at Shaver at the end.
Had a break at the end?
Yes.
Good.
Needed.
Now you're back at it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about this, but you shipped me over the latest incarnation of the screenplay of The Shack.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, is that okay? We talk about it?
Sure.
Man, I tell you what, I know it's still in flux and nobody's sure what you guys are going to shoot yet, but this is the best version. This is version 9, it says on
Yes,
online.
Wow. Yes.
You guys know you're working from an existing book, do you not?
I keep raising that flag.
Yeah.
You know what's so amazing is I just don't think most people have ever encountered God as a person with whom they actually have a relationship and know. So this really is like a foreign animal that they're not sure what to do. And when you start talking about that, they kind of like it, but they kind of don't know what to do.
Yeah, well, we've run into that forever in the whole religious landscape. I mean, this is Hollywood people, which is very different still. But even I was telling you before we started, I've been talking to some folks that when you really get down to, this is a journey lived inside of God's growing revelation in your heart. And it's not like listening to voices on your bed at night. It's not all the strange stuff. It's just there's a growing sense that you're not alone and God makes himself known and he becomes a personality you relate to in an ongoing conversation. I don't mean just, hey God, how you doing? I'm doing fine. Thank God you're doing. It's not that kind of. It's over days and weeks of God letting things be known and living inside that reality of affection and insight. And when people have not experienced that, or, and I would say even have no hope of experiencing it, to them, Christianity is just, there's the rules, there's the book, follow the rules, shut your mouth. It's complicated to get people who haven't climbed up the other wall of relationality to get it.
No, but I think what you just said about they've lost that hope that even something like that could be real. I don't think I've ever heard that phrase, but I think that hits the nail on the head because I do think that you have to actually be open for that to happen. God doesn't force himself into your heart.
Right.
There has to be a sort of a welcoming, an opening to that. And I think a lot of people have been so beaten and bruised and disappointed with how dissatisfying religion has been. They really shut the door and locked it and said, I'm done with that.
Yeah, and I think partly because, A, it never happened for them. Maybe they were faithful, went through all the services, sat through all the meetings, jumped through all the hoops they were given. And I don't feel like God, and I hear that a lot, I don't feel like God's made any connection with me.
Yeah, they put their money in the vending machine, and it didn't give them what they thought.
And I think that's part of the problem. I know when the Jesus Calling book that came out a year or two ago, and it was all written in the first person, like God was talking through the writer, which people had problems with it. But other people have been really, really blessed by it. I'm not trying to down the book. I know people have been really touched by it. I did an article like that for one of my newsletters a long time ago, and I got a little pushback.
Is it written by Jesus?
Yeah, I just did it in the first person. What Jesus might be saying to you. And it freaked out some people, to be honest. It was like, how dare you speak for God? And as long as people understand, it's just a literary device. I don't claim to speak for God. It's my best idea of what God might be saying, and I think if you read that Jesus Calling in the same way. But Christianity Today did a whole article about how anyone creates the idea that God speaks today to people's hearts is destroying the body of Christ.
And what?
Yes, it was so over the top. God doesn't talk today. You can't act like he talks to people. You don't create that hope in people.
Then there's no relationship.
So there's
period.
No, there's actually a concentrated pushback on No, he does not talk. We have the book. We've had the book for a long time. Shut up and follow the book. And even worse than that, shut up and follow my interpretation of the book, which is even worse than the book, as someone has misconstrued it. But there's actually a wing, and I would say probably the predominant wing of evangelical Christianity, that talks about a personal relationship with Jesus, but means it very ethereally.
Principally.
Yeah, you went through the Roman road or sinner's prayer or whatever. You have it. You may not see it. You don't know it.
You got the principles.
It never invades your life in any reasonable way. But just trust. You have it. Yeah,
you got it.
Fake it till you make it, you know, as they. And I think that's what's hard for people to just go, really mean. And he wants to talk to me. He wants to be engaged in my life. And more than just telling us what to do, I think this is more of a. Someone compared it recently. I heard this analogy. I thought it was interesting. It's like the relationship I have with my right hand.
Okay.
In other words, I don't talk to my right hand. I don't tell it what to do.
But it does.
But we have an ongoing communion. And we have an ongoing collaboration, cooperation.
We're together.
And I think that helps me with the relationship when people think, oh, it's just you sit down and hear voices. No, it's not sitting down. It's not even, well, I ask God a question and I get an answer in the next week or two. It may seep in over a time,
right.
But I have a sense of affection that runs beyond Wayne's own thoughts for himself. I have a sense of insight, input that it is available to every believer, but we somehow said, no, it's not. And people get the idea that it's not for me, and I've tried it doesn't work, or I've been told I can't have it, and I'm tired of trying. And I think that doesn't make sense.
I mean, they really get stuck there, because that's what I hear repeated more often than not, is that there is the disappointed, I tried, it didn't work syndrome. Yeah. And that I'm kind of going like, I get that. I'm not wanting to diss you. I'm not wanting to say, well, you did it wrong. I understand that. It's just that. I think all of this has transpired not in a singular event that all of a sudden went, oh, I'm awake. It's more like, I mean, that's happened for some people, and I've had some wonderful encounters that are like, wow, that was amazing. But it is a lifelong sense of being one to that place of going like, look, I don't love me like he loves me. I actually know the difference between that. Yeah. I fight with me less than how I think he transforms me.
Right.
And I'm going like, that's not me just thinking happy thoughts of myself. That's not me just going like, okay, let's meditate on peaceful, wonderful things. It's more like I feel watched over. I feel cared for. I feel like there are moments in my life that tiny little details just mean such profound things of I love you that I'm just going like, where in the world does that come from? I know that comes from you, Lord. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I don't need to write about that. I don't need to tell everyone I'm special. It's more like, you know what? I'm loved. And that transforms everything. I want other people to know that. And you can't force that.
No, that's a reality of revelation. And I really, I mean, the book I just finished, Finding Church, finished it while you were gone. It really says that if the church is what Paul describes it to be in the New Testament, then it is the community of people who are engaged in a relationship with him. It's not a group of people who identify as Christian.
And that sit over there in those services and do those things.
Yeah, who jump through Christian hoops. It's people who are learning to know him and live alongside each other with the love that they're receiving from him. They're learning to love others. They're learning to live in the space of, I'm not certain about everything, so I'm not blustering my way in a conversation with you or someone else. I'm going, and I think God's saying this to me. What do you think? There's that open dialogue and exchange. I mean, there's such a richness of life that is available inside people learning to live love who don't have it all figured out yet. And that's not even replicatable in a system where somebody's designed every ritual rule we should follow, and their job is to police that from it.
And everyone else's job is to look at them and expect that that's where the source is going to come from. I mean,
yeah.
I think one of the most amazing things I ever had the joy of experiencing was early in the days of actually pastoring. I just had some friends that spontaneously showed up on a given summer night at our house. And we sat outside under this oak tree. And the most beautiful time with God unfolded. I didn't plan it. I had no sermon to give. I didn't feel the pressure of it. All of a sudden, you just sort of felt like, gosh, everybody here has something that is just life-giving.
Yeah.
And I felt like the Lord was saying, this is my bride. This is church. And I'm going like, oh, my gosh, I like church.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you sit there going like, I love this. But you can't program that.
Oh, yeah. Plan it next week. Invite the same people.
It dies overnight. I mean, it's like you're just going like, Lord, this is a little bit frustrating because I would like to manufacture this, bottle it, and give it to all my friends. Yeah. I actually enjoyed this so much. I want all of them right now to experience it right now.
And I would do it every week if I could.
And you're just going like, but it doesn't work that way. And even when I have like, over time, with years, led a group of people to finally kind of shed themselves of the forms and the expectations of that and finally come into a place of what, and I think I first learned from you in terms that living in a sense of active expectancy, but that isn't totally defined, of just going like, even when I've led a group there, the way they come together still has that pressure of somebody perform and do something.
Somebody lead us. And I think, again, because there's a lot of people there who feel like this doesn't work for me. So I need somebody to tell me what to do. I need to attach my line to somebody who I think has a line to God. And I'll just kind of draft in their wake, and hopefully that'll be it for me. Instead of, no, I just want to say, you can't.
Everybody's got to put their oar in the water.
You got to find this. And yeah. Is it not easy to find? I would say it takes some time. It takes some space opening in your heart. It takes God working. I got a friend this week that
I think it takes dismantling of a lot of things.
Yeah.
More than I think time. I think it's we bring a ton of religious baggage and expectation that it's like trying to drive a cart over a rut.
Yeah.
And you're just going like, you keep falling back into the things that you knew of old that aren't the life-giving things of right now.
And you add that to self. You add that to the whole self of, you add religion to self, and now you've really got a mess. Because I know what I want. I know what makes my life comfortable, my life happy. If God doesn't give it, I'm frustrated. But I got an email from a guy this week, and he didn't tell me this story. I want to wring his neck when I find him. I met him a couple of years ago in England. And we were there this past fall, and I tried to connect with them again, the family. They were just too busy. We couldn't connect. I feel like God had a connection. But here's a guy that was fairly wealthy, been abused a lot in a lot of places. You know, they're friend up to you, so you give lots of money to the things. He's been part of a lot of different religious things that have not panned out and felt used. We just enjoyed the friendship. We loved just being with them and being in their home. And he came out here on a business trip. We had some time in L.A. together. And underneath this current is, I don't think I know the God you know. I want to. I believe Christianity. I accept the truths of all that. I got an email from him. Said, I got to share this with you sometime. Man, I had a breakthrough with God where, man, now I know he's real and he's in my life. And that's where he ended it. I'm like, dude.
That's all he told you.
Yeah, write that email someday. would you flesh that out? But I love the excitement of that because I do, and I know people listen to this podcast, and they'll write me. I'll get lots of email. You know, it's not working for me. I've been trying this for 7 years. And it's not, well, you got to go 8 because it doesn't happen at 7. There's no time, like you said. It's not an issue of time. It's how do I let God dismantle my expectations, my disappointments, my hurts, my even post-enlightenment sense of rationality where everything's got to have a rational whatever. All that blinds me to the supernatural reality. And I don't mean supernatural spooky. I just mean it's beyond us.
Mm-hmm.
And it blinds us to that. And it takes God a while. It takes us a while. But, man, I don't know what you do but keep going.
No, I think you put your hunger out there that's for real, and you just go like, you know what? I'm not going to settle for a substitute until – I mean, I do think it is necessary to have what that guy just called you about. I think it is necessary at some juncture.
It is. It's a revelation.
Got to go, yeah. Oh my gosh, he's real. I actually feel and know that now. It's not like I worked that up or I convinced myself. It's the fact that, gosh, there was no work in that, and I somehow get that. I think it is a lot like being in love. You can do loving things, but that's not the same thing as when there is that
spark.
in the relationship.
My heart has been captured.
And
absolutely.
You're just going like, you know what? The really cool thing about this gospel is there is a God out there who is passionate about me. He's not casually indifferent. He's not like, well, you know, like whenever you sort of finally please me, I'll let you know that I like you. It's right. He actually is pursuing me and he loves me. I think we have been so wounded in our disappointments. We really have pulled down the shades and closed the doors and just gone like, I don't want to keep wanting that because I don't have control over it. And I don't want to hurt and I don't want to ache. And I'm going like, some of the deepest times where I think I have learned more about who God is have not been the rainbows and puppy dogs moments.
Right.
They have been the painful moments of, gosh, this hurts, this sucks, but I don't feel alone. And I know what it was to feel alone. And somehow this is different. And I felt like, gosh, Lord, I don't know what you feel, and I'm not going to presume to, oh, I just have that prophetic knowing. We're like, I sometimes go, I get that you have emotions and you feel stuff and you feel with me. That's extraordinary.
Yeah.
And I think that to be available to that and to say, Lord, you know, I absolutely want that. That's not a prayer that's going to go unanswered or unlistened to or unresponded to, but there isn't a, like, framework that says this is how he answers that.
Yeah. And there's I like the language of seeping in. Let that reality seep in. Not every day in my life, I doubt yours. Not every day is a wild revelation from God moment. I mean, there's many days that are mundane. There's many days you're just plugging along through the stuff.
Normal.
But God's reality seeps into the core of our lives, the broken places, the hurt place. He's gonna win that. And I just, people got to keep that hope alive. I'm telling Jesse Jackson, I keep the hope alive. But there's got to be a way that we let our hearts just keep saying, okay, God, if I'm missing it, show me. I really believe that you want an engagement with me. Because if you know you're loved by God because you read it and he loves me, that's not enough. It just isn't.
No, it's nice, but it isn't enough. You know, I think one of the most valuable things I learned from you in our friendship was the idea of God winning me to something that I couldn't just discipline myself unto. I don't think anyone ever in religion presented that to me. And I was a hardworking Christian.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we were trying to win him.
Yes.
Okay. I'm a good boy. Yeah, really. I'm good. Yeah. Give me good.
But you know, even just this, the whole dynamic of trust, I think that is such a profound paradigm. You can't trust God unless you are convinced that he loves you. And when you're not sure of that, trust is the most elusive thing on the planet.
Absolutely.
I can't find it anywhere.
But if you just trust God more, you won't be hurt.
It is the most natural thing when I finally am able to rest in the fact that says, you know what? Apart from the circumstances that would love to tell me this or that, I am loved. And that bad thing that I just experienced can't rob me of that. And just going like, I have had not just an encounter, I've had a long seeping line of things that have helped reinforce that. But it was probably the most freeing thing to all of a sudden let go of the white knuckling I'm trying to make that happen. And I think that was when you and I hooked up and the friendship began, I was really at the point of just going like, this institutional thing is not working for me, and I'm working it really hard. It ought to.
I'm benefiting from it.
Hard work and investment is fruit of what matters. And I'm going like, farmer, sowing seed, I should have a harvest here. He's just going like, what gives? He's going like, this isn't yielding what my heart is longing for, because God is not a system to be worked.
Well, the harvest of self-effort is still going to be frustration, because even if it's in a religious, especially maybe if it's in a religious construct.
Ooh. That's an oochie.
Well, I think because I don't think most people separate the difference. I heard you talking a few minutes ago. I'm thinking about the scripture, for God so loved the world, or God is love, and we know this, that he loves us. There's a difference between trusting that scripture to be true and knowing the reality and trusting the person behind the words.
Yeah, profound right there.
And I think, unfortunately, for most Christians, we've been content to leave them right here. Here's told you the truth. Now you
memorize
believe
it.
And you believe the right stuff, so right. You're good.
You've
fake
got
it.
The verse.
Yeah. Instead of, no, that's not enough. Until you know Jesus' own words about the scripture, the reality is behind the words. The reality is not in the words.
Yeah.
The words point to me. I'm the reality. Life's
but
here.
But you refuse to come to me.
And our trust is not, I trust in the scriptures, but I trust in the one whom the scriptures reveal. And that, and I want to say this to every, that's a reality you can't force to happen. But I like your words earlier. You can make yourself available for God to win it in you.
Yeah.
And if that's nothing more than every day just getting up saying, okay, God, today, would you show me this love? I want to know you as a person in the universe. And let your day unfold. Don't expect stars to be brighter and, you know, moonshots to come across your bow. Just wake up and look for his fingerprints as you walk through a day. Let that reality seep in, because without it, you can't have a real Christian life, and without it, you can't have what real community is all about. Because when you hang out with people who are getting that journey, it's incredible.
Oh.
And when you're not, I mean, I had an encounter last month with a guy that's convinced some doctrine thing is true that I think just as strange as I've ever heard. He even talks about his extra biblical revelation. But what was interesting to me, when we're in the conversation, he is absolutely sure God's shown it to him, and if everyone opposes him, you know, they can be damned because he doesn't care. And I'm like, you know, I told Sarah afterwards, I don't know the person, and I know a lot of people all over this world who are living the journey you and I are talking about.
Yeah.
I know lots of people who do. I know lots of people who listen to God well. I don't know a one of them that lives in the absolute certainty of what they hear. I don't know a soul.
Yeah.
I know people who hear God talk about, well, it seems to be this.
I think.
What do you thought? They're open to talk about it. And I think God has did this wonderful thing of teaching us how to listen to him in a state of humility. I think that's what's about seeing through a glass darkly. It's if we all saw him with absolute certainty, my goodness, fellowship would never happen. I shut up. I know better than you. It would be horrible. But if I get a glimpse of that reality and you get a glimpse of that reality, then when I get that in my backyard in a or in a restaurant and we're talking and I'm going, you know what? I feel like God's asking me this. And what's that sound like to you? And yeah, even if everyone disagrees, I might still go, you know what? I've got to walk down this road because I really feel like it's what he's asking of me. But I'll be open to the fact that I could really be wrong. I'm willing to pay the consequences of being wrong.
Uh-huh.
And I'm willing to come back and say, I was wrong. Lo and behold, you guys were giving me good stuff. So it's not about convincing. It's not about, you know, Christianity by democracy, because I think that's crazy. It's we're all learning to listen. But we hold it lightly because we don't see all that he is. I may even see a piece of it relatively well. But I don't see all that he is.
It really almost took me resigning from being a pastor to be able to sort of get into a freer space of going, I don't have to produce Christian things around me. I'm serious.
Or even produce Christian people.
Yeah. You just sat there going like, I was tasked with the job to build his house, and yet I knew from seminary, they that labor to build his house labor in vain. Yeah, unless he's building it, you go like, this is really stupid. I have all the tools. I should be a Christian contractor, but I can't build his house. Like, is that futility? Yes, that's total futility.
Yeah.
But I can experience him as he builds it. I mean, what has been, I think, the deepest joy and the life-giving thing about our friendship, I don't have something planned with you. We showed up today, well, what are we going to do? I have not a clue.
You didn't get the script I sent you last night?
I think I was supposed to do something and I failed to do it.
Yeah, really?
But
I have a script here. Why don't you have a script? My lines aren't fitting your line.
But the reality is there's always been something of life that we were able to share, and you taught me how to not do that in a forced agenda way. And I hadn't experienced that from other leaders. Because they were always going to, here's the things I got to give to you. I got wonderful friends. They're some of the best preachers on the planet. And when I'm with them, I get some of the best sermons constantly given to me in our conversations. But I don't know that I get the friendship that I get to enjoy of just being able to go, hey, how are you?
Yeah.
And there's something that has been like, you know, where the two or more of you are gathered in my name. It's like, you know what? I know what that is like. I know what it feels like to have Jesus in the room, good or bad circumstances. We've shared some of the most horrible moments in life.
We have.
Together.
And we've not always seen things eye to eye. We've had some amazing disagreements.
Yeah. But I don't really have.
I wish we recorded some of them. That would have been fun to play. Really, really dark ones.
There's some I wanted to forget, really.
Oh, I hear you.
But I don't have a lot of people that I have that sort of whole gamut of history that says, you know what, at the end of the day, I do know that you love me. I, you know, could I prove it? Well, no, there's times I really haven't liked you.
I hear you. There's some days I like me.
The same. But when, like, you know what was cool for me is when we were up at Shaver and you guys were having a service for your mom. I don't know your dad well.
It was just a celebration.
You look dressed up. I wasn't. But
I had no tie on. None.
You look more dressed up than I did.
Well, yeah.
You
came in your wife beater and your jogging shorts.
That's not hard. No, I did. I wore jeans. So, but I had a chance to see your dad and the life that was inside him as an 80-year-old guy that...
89-year-old guy.
I knew it was 80. I knew it wasn't quite 90. 89-year-old guy that was just so passionate about the Holy Spirit. I got to just say, you know what? I had no clue, really, that that's what fired up your dad. Yeah. He was always quieter in the moments that we were there. And I knew you had tremendous respect for him. But I had such an enjoyed appreciation of going like, yeah, I get how that shaped and impacted you.
Absolutely.
And there was just a deep appreciation of going like, gosh, I don't have a lot of friends of history that I could actually have a moment like this and appreciate the depth of what is there and not need to do anything about it, but just to enjoy it. And I went, that was just so cool. There's life there. That taught... Hello, that's church.
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah.
And that's nobody doing anything. That's people being.
Did you like the Lammy story?
Alive. I did like the Lammy story.
I was so concerned where that was going to go so many ways. But yeah. Yeah, now people are going to tell the Lammy story. No, not that I'm on this podcast.
But it is where there's real life, there is real church. And you can't not make it happen. You can't even ruin that if it's real life.
Yeah.
It might seem odd. What's that person doing?
Right.
But you can't stop real life when it's there. You can appreciate it. And that's where I'm just going like, that's what God is looking to build in each one of us.
Yeah.
And when that takes hold, fellowship with other people who are alive, it's really easy. It isn't a strain.
Yeah.
And you're just going like the ability to sort of go, I don't have to coerce you. I don't have to make you do something. I don't have to perform for you to get your validation. I can enjoy you because I actually know where my source of life is happening as opposed to I'm going to try to get some from you.
But you knew that back in the day when you were pastor. You knew where your source of life was.
I did.
In part. But I think part of the overlay for me back then, and probably for you too, I don't know, but was I have a responsibility to help these people do and be something. And I don't get rewarded for the time it takes to help them really open to Jesus. I get rewarded for the, we're all jumping through this hoop incredibly well, and we're saying the same things, looking at the same things, doing the same things. I think one of the problems is you cannot mass produce what we've spent the first half of this podcast talking about.
Yeah.
You can't mass produce a relationship. Nope. It's something God does. To the degree that I get to catalyze it, another human being, I don't think I do that lecturing to a crowd of even 20 or 30 people. I think that happens in a conversation over dinner, in their journey, they're in my journey, not pushing, not convincing, not persuading, not forcing, just simply in a conversation with them, helping them see the fingerprints of Jesus as that's already in their life. When people tell me, I've never heard God say a word to me. If I talk to them for half an hour, they'll come up with three or four things that they'll have said. I was really convinced this. I said, what convinced you? Where did that come from? And I go, that might be him. You're like saying he never talks to you. When in fact, you're very comfortable with the fact that you're seeing things that you think are coming from you or from outer space. Where they're coming from, if not from him. Yeah. And helping people see that and encouraging them into whatever detox, whatever deconstruction has to happen in their religious mind to be in the space where God seeps in. I don't know how to mass produce that. My books don't do that. I don't even try anymore. No. I just think it can create an environment in which if you go seeking, you're going to find.
Yeah.
But if you don't go seeking, if it's enough for you that you read it in a book and can quote Wayne to your friends that you're right, then it's going to be disappointment. It's going to be futility.
I think of the very first question God asks in the garden is, where are you? It's not that he didn't know.
Yeah.
I think what were Adam and Eve doing? Hiding, yeah. Hiding. And so you just go like, I think that question where God is saying, look, I'm seeking, are you findable? That's part of the dialogue he is wanting to have. I mean, the verse that says that unless the Father draws them, we can't come to God.
Right.
And I'm just going like, I don't think as a good, hardworking pastor, I believe that. I figured, well, I'll drive them up the hill. You know?
Yeah.
I'll drive them towards God and he can draw them then.
Yeah.
And I just go like, you know what? The real gift of being able to dialogue, like you were talking, into someone's life is to help them recognize how that wooing may actually be taking place. But I think they're expecting, you know, like Moses. I mean, I do think that, I don't know what traps people, but it's like they have this litmus test of what's valid.
Yeah.
I remember when I was, you know, it's like I was able to speak in tongues, but I was not very confident about it because I figured I made it up. Okay?
Pretty convinced you made it up.
I'm pretty sure I made it up. So I'd never do this in public, but I was like, I want to do something more than just, you know, should have bought a Honda. It's like,
should have bought a Honda.
You know, see my bow tie, tie my bow tie. I got a whole bunch of like tongue starter kits. They're awesome. Okay.
Okay. We need a podcast right here.
But in this moment, it's like at one point, I was kind of directed by somebody in this sort of ministry service moment that we were supposed to go pray in tongues over that guy. And it was in front of everyone else. And I'm going like, oh, no, I'm going to be found out. Assumed everyone else had a genuine gift, but I knew I was making mine up. And so I just sat there going like, well, everyone, I can't not do it. And so I was sort of feeling like, oh, this is terrible. I don't want to be here. But I went ahead and, you know, should have bought my Honda. And what was so amazing is the guy to my left looked at me and said, man, that just sounds so for real. I said, I go like, you got to be kidding. It's like, I feel like I'm trying. And it's like the simple little validation that in my stumblingness of trying to respond to him, the simple little validation that, you know what? Maybe don't fight that with such this external need to validate everything and prove it.
Yeah.
Maybe allow it to happen and see where that leads you over time. That was one of the more helpful moments of being able to go like, you know what? I wasn't faking it till I felt it. It was, I wasn't resisting the natural sense of, I don't know how this is supposed to happen anyways.
Yeah.
And that was a big point of release for me because I've learned a whole bunch of other stuff. Going like, I've had some wonderful encounters with God, but guess what? I've had rarely a moment that someone else led me into that. So I've sometimes wondered, like, is that real? Did I make that up? And you're just going like, if I need to prove it to someone else, I'll be more confident. But in my own heart of hearts, I go like, Lord, I don't really have any value for needing to make that happen. Is it real? And that's where I think the humility of heart that you were talking about is so essential.
Wouldn't it be great to be in the environments where no one has to be something other than they are? And if I think I'm making it up, I can even say, hey, I think I'm making this up. Does this sound real to you? Well, why wouldn't we have those kinds of environments, especially about spiritual things that are so transcendently beyond all of us, instead of we've got everybody, I bet everybody in that circle is thinking, I make up my own shit. So there's one that sounds real. Wow. Hey, guys, this sounds like a real language. This might be something. I mean, wouldn't it? I think we've got the whole religious environment so performance conformity based.
Yeah.
That we don't find the reality.
It's the water we swim in.
What I love about our relationship, going back to that, and I was going to say this about Sarah and my relationship as well. Not everything about our relationship is awesome. We have moments of miscommunication. We have moments of we can't communicate and find a way to get through this together. And we've had moments of where we frustrate each other, even if we're not working at it. But the things that I love. The things I love about my marriage to Sarah are those moments when we're engaged in doing something wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
She's wholeheartedly in. I'm wholeheartedly in. Yeah, there are moments when I lay down my life and do something with Sarah for Sarah just because she wants it and I want to bless her. And I think that's laying down your life moments. Those are fabulous. Yeah. But the ones you really saw, our friendship over the years, we've had those moments of not seeing eye to eye and gone away frustrated and not feeling like we're... But what we have done wholeheartedly together has been awesome.
Yeah.
What Sarah and I do, it can be we're on a project in the yard together, but we both want this. And so we're in it. The other times I'm in her yard because I'm just her husband trying to do what's loving for her. But the other times we're in a project that we're both, and that's, I look at that with the God thing, with God's reality in my life. I love the moments when God and I are wholeheartedly in something. Now, other moments where, you know, I don't get it, I don't understand, I'm confused, I don't know what's happening. But I hold those moments more lightly knowing there's a moment coming. This reality is seeping in. It's getting more real. And I'm going to have more of those whole, and that's what conformity can't do. If I get you, if I convince you of something, and even if we're doing it together, you're not in it wholeheartedly. You've just been convinced.
So a person persuaded against their will is against it still.
Yeah.
And you're just going like, you know what? That just never produces that satisfying, life-giving result. Yeah. David's prayer in Scripture, like, unite my heart to fear your name. You know, the promise that if your eye be single, your whole body be full of light. Well, I don't have any clue what that means, okay? But I do know that it's like, God, can you tractor beam me? Somehow can you attract me where my heart really does become that wholehearted thing?
Yeah.
Because when I'm, you know, I use language with my kids as far as, are you fully present? Right. I think most people live 2-3 inches back behind their eyes.
Or 2-3 years back.
Yeah. But I mean, I think most people live in a protected sense of going like, I'm not going to be fully there. Right. And I'm going like, I experience God a lot more when I am somehow got the courage to be fully present. And I tend to be a lot less self-conscious at that moment.
Right.
When I'm living 2-3 inches back, I'm very self-conscious. Oh, that's why I'm back there.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think the greatest gift you can give another human being is to somehow love them in a way that makes them secure, that they can come fully present.
Yeah.
And God's in that space.
And please understand, wholehearted is, I'm not, my whole heart is perfect.
I don't even know what my whole heart is.
Yeah, we're not talking about, I completely trust God with, did I hear that? I know God will reveal himself, but I completely trust him with everything. I'm what? Dude, I'm not within a million miles of what you're talking about. You might as well be talking about the Bahamas or something. Yeah. No, it's just when God's heart connects with, and I'm in his stuff wholeheartedly, and I'm not always, there are things God begins to put in my heart that I fight. I'm going, okay, that's really a dumb idea. And then I'm thinking, well, why would I have dumb ideas? I've never had dumb ideas. I like all of my ideas. And then God wins me into, and then I'm wholeheartedly in it. And that's what I mean. It's those wonderful moments. And that to me is what the Ecclesia, the Church of Jesus Christ, is all about. Where you and I have wholeheartedly been in something together. Mm-hmm. That expresses it. Now, we don't live there all the time. but we get to overlap it from time to time. And that's what makes it lovely. But all along, like you said, I know you love me and care about me and you're committed to my good. I have no doubt about that. Even when we're disagreeing, even when we're not seeing something well together. I love the fact that I know I'm loved and cared about. And if I needed something, I don't doubt you'd be one of the first people that you were when my house was on fire.
Yeah.
Or almost, and the fire was approaching, you and some others. So, I mean, that's what makes this life work.
And I don't think we came to that revelation overnight in just an instant. I think that
or that was, relationship.
That was a fruit yeah. that grew. And it's like, golly, in this microwave generation of I gotta have it and I gotta know it now, you're just going like, I don't know how spiritual stuff happens that way. I don't know.
Yeah.
It might, but not typically for me. And I mean, I love the power of God. But I can't make it happen on somebody.
No.
It's like, you know what? I don't even have any confidence to try if there isn't the sense that, you know what? He's making himself known here. I'm not really in charge. I am participating.
And I'm going to ride that roller coaster as long as it's near me. When I see something he's doing, I'm on that ride.
I'm there.
But everything doesn't go on forever. Then it just winds up what God does there. And he invites us back into what's next.
Or at the end of there, you have to get all your love gifts to try to build your next coaster.
Oh, boy. That's not good.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com or add your voice by calling our comment line at 805-539-6980.